This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Sales of electronic cigarettes, battery-powered devices that allow users to inhale doses of vaporized nicotine, are expected to reach almost $2 billion in the U.S. this year. Now, some say e-cigarettes help smokers kick their habit, but their long-term health risks are still under study. Joining me this afternoon, Dr. Susan Penny, Program Leader, Cancer Etiology Control and Prevention of the Cincinnati Cancer Center, and Deputy Director of the Center for Environmental Genetics, Nurse Practitioner and Certified Tobacco Treatment Specialist with the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, Michael Kruger, and Dr. Shannon Miller, VA Medical Center Physician and Certified Tobacco Treatment Specialist and UC College of Medicine Professor of Clinical Psychiatry. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk at WVXU.org. And you can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Susan, can you explain to us how an electronic cigarette works?
Yes. An electronic cigarette is basically an electronic device that has a cartridge containing nicotine and other components that really just help deliver the nicotine by aerosolizing it.
So it's vaporized nicotine? Is that a
correct way to
analyze it? And so in this case, there's no tar, there's no odor, correct? But there's still the nicotine in the smoke.
That's correct. I mean, when you smoke traditional cigarettes, there are chemicals that you're inhaling other than just nicotine that are carcinogens. Some of them are chemicals that are products of combustion and can be result in lung cancer.
Nicotine itself, though, is still considered to be an addictive substance and to some extent
definitely,
a toxin.
Definitely nicotine is an addictive substance and actually is not considered a carcinogen. It's the other components of cigarette smoke that are carcinogens.
Oh, okay. Okay. Michael, where did the idea for these originate? It seems like they just kind of sprung up all of a sudden.
Well, I'm Michael. That's okay. From what I understand, they were invented in 2003 by a Chinese pharmacist, Han Link, actually. And I don't think he was very successful at the time of actually producing a device that produced the nicotine the way he wanted it to. But the idea was conceptualized there. And since then, basically, there's 250 different devices that are out on the market, and they all have different ways of delivering the nicotine. And that's one of the problems because we don't really know the safety of these delivery systems overall. They do deliver the nicotine. Basically, there's 7,000 different chemicals in tobacco smoke, 70 different carcinogens in tobacco smoke. And as I tell my patients, the only one that's really addictive is nicotine, and nicotine is a natural substance of the tobacco leaf. And so basically that's what keeps people smoking is the nicotine.
When did these first make their way into the U.S., originating in China? When did we first start seeing them in this country?
That I don't particularly know. I've started seeing them in the clinic maybe about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. In our tobacco treatment center, we see basically about 1,000 people a year. We get 1,500 consults throughout our electronic medical record system. And basically over the past year, we've probably had 5,000 visits. And I would say that there's a good handful that have used the electronic cigarettes. Most of them have only tried it because they don't really get the robust satisfaction from pulling on the electronic cigarette that they do from a regular tobacco cigarette. I have some experiences where people have used them over the long term. And it's interesting because it has helped in the long run some people, a very small percentage of the population, where they need to have something in their mouth. You know, they need to pull something, you know, have a device that they're used to holding in the mouth. And basically, the only difference, the only thing in common with an electronic cigarette than a combustible cigarette is that it's a mouth device. You don't inhale it. You basically vapor it. They call it vaping. And basically you suck it in with your mouth without inhaling, like you're pulling in on a sucker, and you hold it there. And basically then you end up breathing, you inhale, and then you're supposed to close your mouth and exhale through your nose. So basically it's a two-prong approach of getting the nicotine, and it's absorbed through the mucous membranes of the mouth primarily and also in the nose. Very little, as we know right now, is absorbed in the lungs. I have noticed that some people who have used this really don't, since they don't get that robust satisfaction of the nicotine withdrawal symptoms, they basically use it a lot more intensely. They inhale on it, you know, basically a lot more. And like a cigarette that you buy that may last, is supposed to last for 5 days, may only last 2 days because they're really using it a lot.
Shannon, are there a lot of things that we still don't know about electronic cigarettes? Still a lot of study yet to be done on these?
There is. There's a great deal we don't know. These devices actually go even further back to 1963 was the first device relating an electronic type cigarette. Since that time, the tobacco companies have put forward a couple e-cigarette-like devices and marketed them, 88 to 89, I think the early 90s, and then to what we have today. And they've really appeared in the U.S. around 2007 and doubling each year in terms of users. However, it's kind of a cart before the horse. While most users who use them are folks who are either former tobacco smokers or current smokers, what we find is among those who are using them, typically they're using both the e-cigarette and still their tobacco cigarettes. And so the idea is that they are not to be advertised as a treatment to help people stop or reduce their smoking. But when you look at surveys of individuals who do use them, that's a very large reason for why they do that. That being said, there really isn't enough data to support that they actually are safe and effective in doing so. There are some studies that are just starting to come out to address that question, which is helpful. Some of these studies seem to suggest that, at this point anyway, at best, they may work as potentially as well as nicotine replacement therapy, like the patch. But in some of those studies, for example, the patch was capped off at a max dose, whereas the e-cigarette was allowed to roam as high as you wanted to. So what's really needed are well-designed studies that truly pit equal groups with an equal treatment. And then additionally, many of these studies are just for a couple of weeks or months. With tobacco cigarettes, the cancer in terms of long-term health effect can be seen like 20 years later from using. And so with the e-cigarette, we don't have long-term studies to look at safety. So safety and efficacy are not well studied as yet, and they really need to be.
Let's speak with Doug from Hartwell. Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon. How's everyone doing?
Doing great, thank you. How about yourself?
Doing well, thanks. I'm just calling to toss out for your listeners some anecdotal evidence. I recently switched to electronic cigarettes about 2 weeks ago. I did some research online. There's some brick-and-mortar stores here in the area where you can go, and there's all types of different ones out there. There's batteries then that you can choose your own liquids and choose the different value of nicotine in those liquids. And so when I made the switch, because I've been wanting to quit smoking, I went and did my research, found something that I thought would work for me, and of course completely anecdotal, but it worked 100%, and I urge anyone that's out there listening that has thought about it, look up the stores here in the area. You don't have to buy the stuff online, and I have been thrilled with the results. I feel fantastic. Quitting smoking was really difficult, but using the electronic cigarette, and you can then go as you go, you can slowly go down in nicotine in the flavored juices that you use. So I started at 18 milligrams. I'm going to switch to 12 here in a few weeks, then switch to 6, then switch to 0, and hopefully be completely nicotine-free within a year or so. That's my plan.
Well, good for you. Good for you. Wish you luck on that, Doug, and thank you for your comment. Now, if you've used electronic cigarettes to help you quit smoking, call and tell us about your experience, 513-419-7100. Kevin, would you like to respond to that?
Sure. In a tobacco
Michael,
treatment
I mean,
program.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Basically, in the tobacco treatment center, we basically look at nicotine as a dependency. And I think I certainly support using anything to decrease, the frequency of use. We generally call it harm reduction. But if you decrease the frequency of use with the intentions of saying, okay, I want to get off this nicotine, then there may be a place for it. Certainly we can't recommend them at the moment, but certainly if the overall intentions is to stop the nicotine dependence, Chris sounds like he's highly motivated to quit smoking. It's a great thing, the day that you quit smoking tobacco, which is a combustible product, and it's the combustible toxins that are in the smoke that are really the hazardous part of, the problem. But through decreasing in use and then maybe one day say, okay, I'm going to quit altogether, even with your typical treatment with nicotine patches and lozenges and gum, treatment is basically 10, 12, maybe 14 weeks. And you gradually do the same thing. You taper the amount of nicotine that you use over time. So being able, to have an idea of a plan to say, I'm going to use the 18 milligram cartridges, then go to 12, and then go to 10, that sounds like a very, workable plan because you're not just jumping off, like say I'm going to quit cold turkey, and you're gradually decreasing your use over time.
We will continue our conversation about electronic cigarettes after the break, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining me this afternoon are Dr. Susan Penny with the Cincinnati Cancer Center and the Center for Environmental Genetics, a nurse practitioner Michael Kruger with the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, and Dr. Shannon Miller with the Cincinnati VC and UC, or Cincinnati VA and UC College of Medicine. And cigarette ads have been banned since, the early 1970s, I believe. So I was pretty shocked when I saw the first time I saw an ad for an electronic cigarette. I think it was with Stephen Dorff, the actor. And it rather took me aback because I hadn't seen a tobacco product ad on TV in so long. And what's your reaction to that, Susan?
Well, I think there are a number of concerns about that. Just to go back to what Mike was saying, there really are kind of two categories of health risks with traditional cigarette smoking. One is the nicotine addiction, and the other is the health effects that, like lung cancer, that come from all the carcinogens. And as you said, you don't get as a robust nicotine reaction for electronic cigarettes. So with the advertising, to get to the advertising, one of my concerns is young people. And based on a study done by CDC, the percent of young people using electronic cigarettes has about doubled the last couple of years. But what I find even more fascinating is that about 9% of young people who say they use electronic cigarettes, and these are young people between grade 6 and 12, say that they have never used conventional cigarettes. Now, I'm concerned that as time goes on, those young people will be switching to conventional cigarettes and be experiencing the exposure to all the carcinogens that are in traditional cigarettes. So that's just one concern that goes with the advertisement. But I think, the same concerns that were there for the advertisements for traditional cigarettes certainly are there for electronic cigarettes.
And aren't e-cigarettes coming out in like a variety of different flavors, like cherry and cookies and cream, which is something that certainly makes it tempting for a younger person?
And that's important. I would add, in terms of regulation, actually the FDA may put out regulations this month. We're waiting on that. The UK was also to put out regulations potentially this month. Right now, you either can be regulated as a medication, a treatment, or regulated as a tobacco product, or regulated as a consumer healthcare or consumer product. And the e-cigarettes, as I said, the cart before the horse, aren't currently regulated in any of those domains. And while most users who use them to reduce or stop smoking, the data really isn't robust enough there to support that. The World Health Organization, the FDA, both do not support their use as smoking reduction or cessation devices. If they take that approach that they begin advertising them as such, and there is some subtle advertising if you look at some of the ads that are out there, then that begins to lean towards they should be regulated as a medicine. Whether or not they would be regulated as a tobacco product, it's nicotine, not the tobacco plant. So there are a number of arguments back and forth, pro and con, but a couple of important points. One is that in terms of safety, there have been a number of interesting studies very recently that have shown that while there are a number of adverse chemicals in tobacco smoke that are not present in e-cigarettes, there are also a number like chromium, copper, magnesium, manganese, and lead that are present, depending on the e-cigarette, in the same amounts as a tobacco cigarette. Additionally, there are other chemicals such as aluminum, iron, nickel, and sodium that are present in higher levels in e-cigarettes. Additionally, there's been some research to suggest that some of the flavorings, perhaps cinnamon and coffee flavorings, may have cytotoxic effects, injurious effects on cells, at least in outside of an animal in lab studies. And so there are issues about safety that really need to be explored with these devices. And then another important point is that while tobacco smoke is inhaled into the lungs and nicotine replacement products that people use to stop smoking, like the patch, the gum, et cetera, are typically brought into the mouth and held or a patch or into the nose, they don't go down into the lung. The e-cigarette, however, kind of exists in between. You pull it into the mouth, but there is data that supports that folks drag and pull more strongly, as Mike was saying, on e-cigarettes than they do their traditional cigarette. And so there's concern that their vapor is actually getting down further past the back of the throat into the bronchi and maybe even into the lungs. And so studies have looked at the humectant, which is the chemical that's added with the nicotine to keep it stable before it's vaporized out. And the humectant also has raised questions about exposures long term. And so there are a variety of concerns with this product that while I think everybody would like to see any additional device as the one caller that could support reduced or stop tobacco cigarette exposure, you first need to find something that's safe and it works. And in the studies that have looked at what does it work, it's shown on average maybe a reduction from 20 cigarettes per day to 18 in one study, maybe 20 to 15 in another. But in the end, most folks who use an e-cigarette continue to use their tobacco cigarette. And in the end, you've got a product, nicotine, which really is an insecticide. It has been shown to have cancer-promoting qualities. And so getting that into the bronchi, and for someone who may choose to use an e-cigarette for a long period of time beyond the length of many of these studies, there's questions that we would like to understand more about in terms of safety for a product that, as yet, may work no better than a patch that's capped out at 21 milligrams. So we're interested in this product, but there's a lot more, I think, that needs to be understood. And I agree with the concerns about new smokers and adolescent smokers. That's a big concern.
Let's talk to Brett from Cincinnati, bring him into the conversation. Hi, Brett. How are you today?
Fine, thanks.
What's your question?
Yeah, my question for the panel is if they have any knowledge on whether the tobacco contained in cigars is equal in terms of the amount of carcinogens to that contained in cigarettes.
Good question. Thank you, Brett.
Tobacco cigarettes?
Right, cigars. The question was cigars versus cigarettes versus e-cigarettes. I know cigar smoking has become quite popular, and a lot of people view it as a better alternative than a cigarette, and I'm not quite sure if that's true or not. But
well, I can speak a little bit to the cigar smoking. Basically, cigars, you know, and even some cigarettes that claim they have no additives are basically falsely giving people the impression that they're safer. There are some additives that tobacco companies can add to cigarettes for flavoring, for taste. You know, their recipes are very specific and they're basically top secret. So there are differences in very mild taste between Kool's and Salem's or other menthols. And so, and same with cigars. You know, there's a different type. Cigars have also different flavoring. The difference between a cigar and a cigarette is what it's wrapped with. A thing that's defined as a cigar, it's wrapped with a tobacco leaf. So there's even things called little cigars, which are the size of cigarettes, which are much more potent in nicotine than a regular cigarette. And so, and they're less expensive because they're not taxed the same. So you can buy a pack of little cigars for $2, or, you know, you can say, I need the $6 pack of, you know, whatever top brand you're selling or using. So and a lot of times tobacco cigar smokers don't inhale directly. If you're a tobacco or a cigar smoker from the beginning, you're likely a puffer, a chewer. And so basically, you don't really inhale deep into the lungs, and you get really secondhand smoke. A cigarette smoker really inhales deep into the lung, into the alveoli, over into the blood, and into the brain. And so cigar smokers really get their nicotine through secondhand smoke that they inhale through their nose, around the environment, and also from the mouth. It's interesting that there are tobacco cigar smokers now. If they were previous cigarette smokers, they're going to be inhalers. If you're a lifelong cigar smoker or pipe smoker, you're not going to inhale it. You're a puffer. And so if somebody has switched from cigarettes to cigars, really it's much more hazardous because they're inhaling that higher, toxic, those toxic chemicals.
You started to talk about secondhand smoke. What do we know about the secondhand smoke from electronic cigarettes? Is that something that's still an unknown quantity as well?
It is, but it's actually being studied. So they're looking at – they look at the effects, the health risks of the cartamizer fluid or the refill fluid for which they found a number of these chemicals. And in addition, by the way, in addition to metals that I described, they found actually tin particles from breakdown of the soldering joints in the cigarettes that gets into the component that's taken into the body. So there's concerns as well about what metal tin fragments and other fragments of metal coming into your body that you then bring in. There are questions about and there's actually been a study that looked at the effect of e-cigarette vapor, the exhale. So you can study the fluid, you can study the aerosol, and then you can study the aerosol that goes into the person. And then the exhale, thirdly, you can study that comes out of the individual. And they've been looking at that. And there's been a recent paper that supports that not only are there concerns with some components of the exhale as having potential harmful ingredients, but further, that those exhale products are actually deposited in the environment. And so now folks are concerned about Clean Indoor Air Act and would there be an impact on these on that. There's also been concerns about individuals spilling the fluid onto their body and getting a nicotine toxicity exposure. There's been some case reports of young children getting into the fluid and drinking it and having toxic effects and having to go to the hospital. But I do want to follow up on the prior caller about cigar versus cigarette toxicity, carcinogenicity. They're really kind of different products in that a cigarette is a very effective delivery vehicle for freebase nicotine. It's been very well designed to freebase that nicotine so it increases the absorption through the respiratory tract directly into the brain. The cigar, though, works a little differently in that it's absorbed more through the back of the throat, the oral buccal mucosa. So it comes in a different way. The exposures are different. However, you're still dealing with a leaf that's been bred a certain way. And nicotine is actually converted to tobacco-specific nitrosamines, which are one of a number of cancer-causing ingredients. And so there's risk however you look at it, but different products with different kinds of risk.
Let's talk with Mike from downtown. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
To call in just because, you know, I've been a smoker, a cigarette smoker, for probably going on 20 years. And I had tried electronic cigarettes from here and there kind of over the past couple years, and namely some of the ones that are being marketed and kind of available in most gas stations. that particular brand I never found to work quite well for my needs. So I would kind of invest some money in that and then give it up pretty quickly. And then recently a friend of mine sent me kind of a battery operated setup. And for whatever reason, I don't know if the technology has been getting better, but it was enough to kind of satisfy my need for smoking. And so I haven't really smoked cigarettes at all in about 4 or 5 months. And I think on maybe one or two occasions I had tried a cigarette in the meantime, and I pretty much cannot stand traditional cigarette smoke at this point. So it's effectively helped me not want to smoke cigarettes at all, but I do find myself in need of using this electronic device. And again, I do have, and kind of always have had concerns about, you know, the long-term effects, because there's just not enough information on it. But my question is, it seems as though it's got to be better than traditional cigarettes, but that could be kind of a false belief. Any thoughts on that type of situation?
Mike, thank you for your question.
Yeah, I think that by and large, people think that you're not burning tobacco and inhaling, you know, some combustible product. And so by and far, it seems rather intuitive that, you know, it's safer, you know, than inhaling smoke. However, like what Shannon had said, you know, the differences, you know, are quite different, although there still may be risk. You know, you remember that in the 1960s, basically 60% of the population smoked. And so when all of this research came out about how terrible it was, you know, the general population now is about 20% of smokers. And so who knows what's going to happen with electronic cigarettes, and if it's going to be – there's 250 products out there. They're all different, you know, and what do they deliver? You know, it's one thing that I have to say as a tobacco treatment specialist is, and I can understand why the studies show electronic cigarettes as being more favorable to use to cut down or quit smoking. You know, it's something you're holding in your mouth. It's a part of your daily routine. You know, and you know, a smoker is telling themselves, hey, this isn't as bad. You know, it's not as bad, so I might as well keep doing it. The problem is that, you know, basically it sustains the nicotine addiction. And basically, how do you then cut back and stop? And basically, you know, I have to acknowledge that the traditional nicotine replacement medication is rather boring, you know, and it's basically, you know, hard for people to say, hey, the patch is cheaper than smoking, but I'm still going to smoke instead of using the patch. So,
yeah. Susan, last word here.
Well, I do want to throw in something here. I study genetic susceptibility for lung cancer. And, you know, as you were mentioning, smokers have 15 to 30 times the lifetime risk of getting lung cancer compared to non-smokers. But beyond that, there are people with certain genetic susceptibility that have an 80% or 100% lifetime risk of getting lung cancer. So I think it's somewhat here, how do you, you know, what do you know about your personal risks and how do you weigh relative risks? And for someone like that, I mean, who cannot absolutely quit smoking, cannot get away, you know, an e-cigarette may provide a safer option than traditional smoking.
And I would add that when you look at studies and smokers who use e-cigarettes for 3 to 4 months or 3 months with very little to no behavioral support, actually the 6-month quit rates in better designed studies are about 5 to 12%. Importantly, matched against nicotine replacement therapy, you're not achieving a better quit rate, but probably a better proven and safer product. And the one point I'd make about nicotine, it's like alcohol detox. You're giving the drug to bring them down, the drug that causes literally hardware changes in the brain, changes receptors in the brain that you favor your drug over other things. But when you taper off, whether e-cigarette or otherwise, off the drug, there still remain very well research-supported software changes, conditioning and neurotransmitter changes that the brain still favors nicotine. So even though you've used whatever nicotine replacement product it may be, it's the treatment and the behavioral support that you get from a treatment provider that really makes a long-term difference.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining me this afternoon. Dr. Susan Penny, Program Leader, Cancer Etiology Control and Prevention of the Cincinnati Cancer Center and Deputy Director of the Center for Environmental Genetics. Nurse Practitioner and Certified Tobacco Treatment Specialist with the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, Michael Kruger. And Dr. Shannon Miller, who is with the VA Medical Center as a physician and certified tobacco treatment specialist. He's also with the UC College of Medicine as a professor of clinical psychiatry. So after the break, what can Cincinnati learn from Detroit? This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.